Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity for the Attorney General's Department to appear before the committee today. I understand that the committee is interested in data retention, so I'll provide some background information in this area. I should say that no decision has been made by government about a data retention proposal. First, I would like to provide the committee with the context within which data retention arises. Telecommunications data is information about the process of a communication as distinct from its content. It includes information about the identity of the sending and receiving parties and related subscriber details. It includes account identifying information collected by the carrier or the carriage service provider to establish an account. It includes information such as the time and date of the communication, as well as the duration, location and type of communication. Telecommunications data does not disclose the content or substance of a communication, so no details of the contents of a text message or an email would be stored under any proposal. Access to telecommunications data is currently governed by the Telecommunication Interception and Access Act 1979. The Interception Act allows access to telecommunication data that carriers and carriage service providers keep for business purposes, such as billing and taxation. The ability to lawfully access telecommunications data held by carriers and carriage service providers is a vital tool for agencies in the investigation of serious and organised crime and the protection of national security. The disclosure of telecommunications data can be authorised by a senior officer of a security agency or any agency that enforces the criminal law, a law that imposes pecuniary penalty, or an agency that protects the public revenue. This ranges from law enforcement agencies such as the Australian Federal Police to an investigation agency such as ASIC, Customs, ATO, ACCC and Centrelink. Agencies as these utilise telecommunications data to ensure the integrity of financial markets, protect Australian borders, protect the public revenue and to enforce pecuniary penalties. Many of these investigative agencies rely heavily on telecommunications data as it is the most useful tool available to them in their investigations. Legislation contains restrictions on both the access and use of telecommunications data. The restrictions reflect the Interception Act's focus on protecting the freedom to communicate and protecting the privacy of parties who are not the subject of criminal investigations while still facilitating investigations. Balancing these competing needs is a key role for government as a public concern about the use of telecommunications data crystallises around privacy issues. Having outlined the broad context in which data retention proposal exists, I would like to provide the committee with an understanding of the importance of telecommunications data and the rationale for the development of a data retention regime proposal in Australia. Telecommunications data is an important investigative tool, as I've previously said. It can provide important leads for agencies, including evidence of connections and relationships within larger associations over time, evidence of targets' movements and habits, a snapshot of events immediately before and after a crime, evidence to exclude people from suspicion, and evidence needed to obtain warrants for the more intrusive investigative techniques such as interception or access to content. Access to telecommunications data is one of the most efficient and cost-effective investigative tools available to law enforcement. There are no operational risks and it raises fewer privacy concerns than the other covert investigative methods. Targets of interest continue to utilise a wider range of telecommunications services available to communicate, coordinate, manage and commit crimes. The proliferation of new services and the ways to communicate is impacting on agencies' opportunities to utilise telecommunications content. There are also ever-increasing levels of technology-enabled crime and cybercrime, such as child exploitation, online fraud, that can only be investigated by access to historical internet-based telecommunications data. These are some of the reasons for the increased reliance on telecommunications data by our investigative bodies. Industry has acknowledged that depending on the circumstances, telecommunications data can be as important or more important than telecommunications content. However, despite the increased reliance on telecommunications data and the acknowledgement of the importance of telecommunications data, industry have confirmed that there will be changes and reductions in the type of telecommunications data which will be retained into the future. They indicate that this is a natural evolution and as a result of advances in technology and business models. For example, the telecommunications sector is quickly migrating from the traditional telephone network to internet protocol-based networks. Traditionally, telephony services retain detailed billing information on who called who, when and where, and the time of each call. Internet-based service providers tend to charge on the quantity of data used rather than on the call per call basis. Over time, as telecommunications services such as voice telephone migrate to voice over internet-based services, less and less information will be retained and stored. Therefore, this means that traditionally available telecommunications data as person X called person Y at this time may no longer be available. The development of a data retention proposal is intended to ensure a national and systemic approach, systematic approach is taken for the availability of telecommunications data for investigative purposes. Data retention will not give agencies new powers. It would ensure that existing investigative capabilities remain available. The Interception Act provides a high level of accountability and strict access requirements to obtain telecommunications information. These constraints recognise the responsibility of government to manage the competing interests of privacy, the expectations of the community that unlawful activity will be investigated and prosecuted, as well as the important role that telecommunications industry plays in supporting law enforcement and investigative activities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms.
Chair. Listener, could you table that document? It's a very extensive opening statement, and it would be handy if we could have it.
Most certainly.
Thank you. Federal Police, any opening statement?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Comfortable with what the Attorney General had to say.
All right. Thank you. Then let's have some questions. Senator Ludlam.
Thank you. Assistant Commissioner, maybe since you didn't give us an opening statement, I might direct my first questions to you. I'm just wondering if you can first of all clear up some perhaps ambiguity. I've got a quote from you here which was in one of the submissions that we received that said the regime revealed earlier this year would have little effect on how the AFP curbed crime. Now that is very literally pulling you out of context. Can you just tell us what you meant by that and what your view is of the importance of the as much as we know about the data retention regime?
Senator, I think what I was trying to say there is that, as Catherine rightly pointed out, that all we're asking for here is the status quo to remain. And if the status quo remains, the ability of the AFP to conduct its investigations will continue as it is today.
Okay.
If there's any changes, obviously that will have a significant impact, as Catherine rightly pointed out, with our ability to do investigations after the event in time.
Okay. So what Ms. Smith has just given us, I think, to paraphrase, is that you're not seeking greater powers over the way in which telecommunications intercepts are obtained, but what we are talking about is the collection of a vastly expanded volume of data of different kinds. So you would have the same powers as you currently have to investigate telecommunications data. There'd be an enormous amount more there. Is that the right distinction to be drawn?
No, that's not the correct distinction. In fact, the volume of information is already available in a lot of cases. What we're seeking is to get certainty from industry that they will retain the information that in many cases they already retain in their current practices in future practices.
That's directly contradicted by what industry has been able to put into the public domain, because I understand the discussions so far have been confidential, that they don't currently retain these logs for years and years at a time, and there's been all kinds of costings about how much it would cost to retain this material. So it's not, I don't think it's true at all to say that these practices are extant already and we would just be formalising them.
I think there needs to be a distinction about what we're actually talking about here. We've had discussions with industry over a period of time to look at the data sets that may be put in place. Now, the data set has changed over time. So for the first point I'd like to make is that the all of the information that was in the original data set has changed over time. So the current proposal or the current thinking around the data set has changed. But also too, we did ask industry for information about the data that they currently retained, and we did receive some information back that indicated that the majority of the data was retained. The difference was the period for which time the data was retained. It did vary from days to years.
Okay, so, all right, so you're seeking consistency, I suppose, right across the industry.
Correct.
Who else did you consult with apart from ISPs? I'm just wondering why your consultation so far as I can tell, the statement, Ms. Smith, that you just read in, probably doubles the sum total of public knowledge available about the proposal. Thank you for that. But why has there been such a restrictive approach taken so far?
We actually did consult with a broad range of people and have done so over some time within the industry. We actually have a list which I can actually table, which is the extent to which we did actually seek people's interest in coming to speak to us or attending one of our sessions that we provided. We had two sessions in Sydney and Melbourne. However, before that time, we were in contact with particular industry bodies. We did not limit our consultation to ISPs. In fact, a wide range of the carrier network were also consulted. We also sought to consult bodies like Internet Industry Association, Communications Alliance, the AMTA, so that we got a feeling for their particular membership, which covers a very broad spectrum of the telecommunications industry. We also consulted broadly with state and Commonwealth agencies and non-interception agencies like the ASICs and ACCC and such like to get their views on what a proposal should look like as well. As I say, I'm happy to table. Many of these people received the discussion information through the Communications Alliance, who sought to actually go out to a broad range of membership. Essentially, you know, the department listens to industry views regularly. In fact, a day does not go by that we're not actually dealing with industry in about some aspect of the legislation, and we consulted with a broad range who we normally consult with, but we also went out and much broadened that in this context because we, the normal people we consult with, it's sounding very convoluted, I apologise, is the main carriers, obviously, who have a lot of interest in law enforcement matters because they get a lot of requests from law enforcement, but we've broadened it to the ISP industry because we believe the future is that ISPs will carry a lot more traffic than they have in the past, and so law enforcement will need to talk to them. So we were very interested in their views. We also, of course, consulted with the Prime Minister and Cabinet, Ms. Sheedy's privacy area, and also the Office of Privacy Commissioner as well. It was very, very broad consultation within government and within industry.
I would accept your definition of broad if we were talking about a purely commercial proposition, but we seem to have inadvertently missed out all of civil society, the public and the Parliament. And the industry participants that you did speak to were all bound by confidentiality and couldn't say anything out of these meetings. So it may be very broad, but I think it's a peculiar definition of broad in my book, in that there is no reliable information in the public domain apart from a document obtained under FOI that had been splattered with black felt marker. Mm-hmm. So we'll accept your tabling of the list of agencies and industry players that you did consult, but my definition of consultation is evidently a little bit different to yours. Could we come back to the Federal Police? Can you describe for us some kinds of offences or a particular crime, obviously without giving away anything sensitive, that you couldn't or can't currently solve without access to the kind of material that we're discussing?
Well, I suppose it's in relation to the access to information we currently get, Senator, and I'll give you a prime example would be Operation Centurion, which was a child pornography investigation, to use the vernacular that's most common. Centurion was a 2008 investigation where the AFP received a number of referrals in relation to a particular activity. All we received to commence our investigation was a number of Australian IP addresses, Internet Protocol addresses, as a result of that investigation, we were able to go back to the metadata and ascertain that there were a large number of Australians that were involved in possessing child abuse material, because the ISPs had retained that information, which enabled us to then take actions in progress. As a result of that, executed in excess of 340 search warrants. We arrested in excess of 140 people. We seized 400,000 images, and more importantly, from my perspective, we actually saved four children that were potentially at risk from child abuse. Now, without that metadata being retained, the AFP cannot do those type of investigations, because we won't have that information to backtrack. And I might add that it doesn't only impact upon the law enforcement ability of the AFP to exercise our right, well, exercise the right of the community to make them safe, but it also has an impact on state and territory law enforcement agencies as well. Murder inquiries and things such as that rely on phone calls that have been made in the past, information that we can then use to actually track offenders, you know, keep context of what the victim has potentially undertaken, etc. If we don't have that metadata, the possibility of progressing that investigation becomes quite limited.
Can I just draw a quick distinction, and thanks for that, because there's the first concrete examples that I guess so I appreciate that. That from a law enforcement perspective, ideally we would all be walking around with video cameras attached to ourselves. Is anybody at the table willing to acknowledge that there are very important privacy implications in effectively treating the entire Australian population as suspects in unknown or unprosecuted offences, just to retain that data just in case any one of us at any given time turns out to be a child abuser? That I would have thought, in the light of this expansion of data to be retained, you would be talking to civil libertarians or privacy activists, or, you know, take your pick. So can we come back to the question of why the consultation, if indeed this task is so worthy, has been so restricted?
Senator, I should say that the consultation was for the purposes of developing a model, not to actually consult on a model. It was, we were talking to people who understand their technology far better than we do, and getting a real appreciation of what was viable, what they currently assist law enforcement and national security with, and what does not work. And in fact, as a result of that, as Ms Kelly said, the data set has changed. I'm more than happy to provide the committee with an in-confidence version of the current data set, which is still being a developed proposal, but I'm sorry, it can't obviously be public for the reasons that it contains information that could be prejudicial to, you know, law enforcement investigations if it was released. But what our consultation was for was to talk to the people, to talk to both law enforcement and industry about what is needed into the future and what is viable under their systems in the future. It was not to actually consult them on a proposal that anyone was putting forward on data retention.
So at what point do you launch into that phase? And can I maybe, on behalf of the committee, if it's not inappropriate, accept that offer of a private briefing, if we're able to do so?
Certainly.
But at what point do you launch the public consultation stage then, if not now?
Well, at the moment, the department is considering the merits of comparative data retention proposal. As I mentioned in my opening statement, no decision has been made on the process of details of any further proposal. So, the department is committed to an open, transparent and consultative approach, acknowledging there is a very strong public interest in these issues, but decisions concerning the timing of any public consultations will be a matter for government.
All right.
Can I ask,
please,
for clarification, Ms Smith, were you offering or seeking to go in camera now, or were you offering to provide a confidential document, or are you offering to provide a briefing in future?
I think, given the time, it's probably more appropriate that we have open questions now, and that we're more than happy to provide more briefing in camera at a later date, or actual briefings. But we do have some information that we can give to you as well, but it has to be on an in-confidence basis.
Okay. That sounds good and sensible, so we will work with you outside this hearing.
Certainly.
For a future date for a...
Okay.
briefing, which may well be private.
Yes.
In terms of the information to hand, if you can deal with the Secretariat in terms of providing that to us in appropriate course and in appropriate form.
Certainly.
In terms of the confidentiality, we won't be looking, it's therefore best that we not look at it today, and appropriate, I think, and then let's proceed publicly as you've suggested. I think everyone's happy. There you go. So far, so good. Senator Ludlam.
Well, has anybody else got any questions? I'll come back later.
Yes, Senator Cameron.
Yeah, thanks. Ms. Smith, I may be a bit naive on this, but if you post a letter, you would expect that letter to be private and not opened unless there was some police investigation or a reason to use the available laws to open the letter. I'm really surprised that Google gave evidence this morning that emails are routinely scanned, and those emails are scanned by a software program that can extract not everything that's in the email, but certain data in the email, and that allows them to then decide what they need to do in terms of advertising and the like. What's the difference between a letter and email?
I'm not an expert on the Postal Act, but I am an expert on, I know a lot about telecommunications interception. And the Act protects a communication, and there can be no access to that communication as it would be an email, unless it's specified under the legislation. I can't comment on Google's particular circumstances. I'm not sure whether they do that scanning in Australia or in the US. I wasn't here for their
So just on that point, so if they do it in the US, if they do it in Australia, would that be legal?
No, it would be subject to the Telecommunications Interception and Access
Act. If they do it in the US?
I can't comment, because that would be subject to potentially US law. So all I'm saying is I can't comment on that, because I'm not aware what their actual technology. However, if they are doing certain things for network protection purposes, in that there are obviously, as you all be well aware, a lot of cybercrime out there that means that networks need to be protected, the Interception and Access Act does provide for certain activities to be undertaken by system administrators for that purpose. So it may be that by software they will scan emails to make sure that they not read it, not look at it, not do anything with it, but have some sort of electronic scanning for that purpose.
There was no evidence this morning that it was for other than commercial reasons.
All right.
So could you take on notice
as
to whether that is legal under Australian law?
Yeah, we'll review the evidence to see if we can do something with that.
What they put to us was that you could opt out of this, but it's quite a complex thing to do. Maybe not so complex if you know how to do it, but finding out how to do it is a different matter. Would it be difficult to have a legislative change to make this type of activity subject, if people want to do it, to an opt-in? If a client of Google wants to opt into the scanning, would that require any changes to law?
The nature of the Interception Act at the moment is such that it requires that for any reading of an email, etc., to happen within the Act, except for law enforcement and national security purposes, the knowledge of the parties to the communication must be aware that something is being done. So if it is the case that I've sent you an email and we both are aware that our service provider looks at them because they've told us that, then arguably that could be. I mean, I'm not providing any legal advice, obviously, on that, but the Interception Act is very strict on what you can and can't do. But you would know better than I how easy it would be to change legislation, but the reality is that I'm not quite sure on what they're going to do, so I don't know whether it is in currently breach of the Act.
When you say reading, is there a definition of reading?
No, there isn't. Reading is not actually mentioned in the legislation.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, because they argued scanning, it was a scanning type software program that just goes in. Yeah. They say they don't know what's in the email, but people don't know what's going on. I think in the new sort of telephones that are coming out, these Android telephones rely on a google.com service to be part of the actual telephone before the telephone can use all its features. So I'm just wondering about what the implications are there, whether there's some scanning going on in there as well.
Well, as you suggested, I'm more than happy to take that issue on notice. My colleague from the Department of Broadband may have a better idea on what's allowed as far as requiring services to be on phones. I'm not really sure.
I'm not a technical expert by any stretch. So could I ask you, to have a look and see whether I'm completely off beam.
Certainly.
In terms of this, the requirement to have a Google email address if you use an Android phone, which are the cutting edge new phones that are coming out.
Well, there you go. I just learnt something. I didn't know that. So I will certainly take that on notice.
If reading is not defined, what is the closest terminology to that? Is it viewed or accessed or wouldn't be published? Scanned? What is it?
Who's got the Act with us? The Act talks about listening. There is a clear definition in the legislation.
Sorry, Senator Cameron, I interrupted your flow.
Can I just say also that I'm also aware for Assistant Commissioner's view that there is some balance needs to be, between law enforcement and, and privacy. But it seems to me that what normally happens is that privacy gives way to law enforcement. And I think there's a lot of concern that we just try to get that balance right. Have you got any view on that?
I think you're right, Senator. There needs to be a balance. I mean, and ultimately that's the balance that will be determined by the Parliament. I hear the concerns of the privacy groups in relation to the fact that law enforcement has access to data that potentially, they think we shouldn't have. But we need to weigh that up in relation to the public good. And as I've said, that if we don't have access to that type of information, certain types of investigations won't be able to be undertaken. And the Parliament obviously has given the AFP and state and territory law enforcement agencies powers to investigate those type of crimes. And we need the tools to enable us to be able to do that.
Thank you.
If I can just respond to that earlier question from the Chair. Interception of communication is actually defined in Section 6 of the interception legislation as being listening to or recording by any means of a communication in its passage over the telecommunication system without the knowledge of the person making the communication.
So it's listening.
Or recording by any means.
So scanning, electronic scanning would be recording by any means, would it?
I'm not in a position to answer that question.
Can you take that on notice?
Certainly. Yeah,
I mean, we need to stay abreast, don't we, Senator Cameron, if not ahead. And what if the recording were so temporal, i.e. say that the definition of recording were satisfied, so the data or information were recorded for a period and then unrecorded, deleted, would it still be captured by the legislation or only for so long as it exists, I suppose? I mean, there are those sorts of issues that we need to think through given the sorts of evidence we've heard today.
Yeah. Look, I think it'd be more appropriate if I take that on notice because the complexities of the telecommunications system are such that there are very many ways of which this is done. So I think to give you a better answer that will be more useful to you, I'd like to take that on notice.
Okay, so are we, before Senator Ludlam probably asks some further questions, are we doing too much in terms of the theme that I've been hammering a bit today, applying offline thinking to online behaviour?
I'll have a crack at that to start with. Our thinking needs to be different. Clearly,
from what it is today?
Correct. And I think you made a point earlier about trying to get ahead of the game. And that's what we need to try and do. Because if we currently stay where we are, we're basically paddling our feet and not actually catching up. We're going to continue to have these discussions moving forward, whereas I think we need to try and get ahead.
How do we do that
is a very good question.
Yeah, how do we tool ourselves to do that?
Well, I know there's some work being done at the moment by the Department in relation to the TI Act, which I think will go some way to actually addressing some of those issues.
Well, the legislation is constantly under review. As soon as new technology comes out, we're constantly looking at the Act to see how appropriate it is to provide appropriate protections, number one, and secondly, appropriate access for law enforcement. So we're looking at all the new technologies and out there to ensure that the Act still appropriately applies to those.
So are you staffed with enough nerds? And I mean that in an entirely complimentary way to the nerds. We need them.
We in this area, we're very well resourced in relation to and we get great assistance from the Australian Federal Police in offering us technical advice and operational advice.
I said to myself, don't go there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
who rushes in when Senator Cameron fears to tread? Gary.
No nerve deficit in the department.
We, many I.
Yeah. Okay. Would any of you care to reflect on... thank you for that brave evidence, Assistant Commissioner, by the way, and Frank. You wouldn't be anything other than... does anyone at the table care to reflect upon the suggestion by the journalist in the AG and McElrath that the challenge for regulators, which is of which you guys are part and parcel because you're either doing it or assisting the government to formulate the policies to do just that. The biggest challenge for the regulator is not so much that the unscrupulous exist, but that there's an industry that's sprung up to protect the identity of those who own and operate dubious websites. Do you want to reflect on that? Have you seen evidence of that, number one? And number two, what should we be doing about it, if anything, given that it's the flip side of protecting the privacy of individuals online. It's the argument being utilised by those who look after the dubious operators is there at the dubious are entitled to their privacy. Returning to one of Senator Ludlam's comments.
There's no evidence that we have dubious content service providers or ISPs operating in this country that I'm aware of, and certainly we haven't been doing any investigations on those. It's probably a fair comment that some of those exist offshore. And we work with our international partners as best as we can to try and address those areas. And certainly, I heard an earlier witness that was talking about phishing sites and the like, and we work with our international partners to take those phishing sites down, and we work with the Department of Broadband and ACMA and others to assist with that endeavour.
Just pull up there. I mean, Senator Ludlam said earlier on in the day they're everywhere but they're nowhere. So when you talk about here and offshore, do you mean the physical location of those who own and operate?
That's correct, Senator.
All right.
So, I mean, basically what we rely on there is the dubious ones being brought to our attention by consumers in this country or offshore. And then we work with our international agencies to bring those down. And as I said, we work with the Australian Communication and Media Authority to assist with that process as well. I mean, the AFP ourselves last year assisted in taking down 70 phishing sites alone. So, I mean, that's an area of concern. Probably more of an area at the moment is actually malicious software coming through. But we work with partners both with industry and with other government agencies to address that. But there's certainly no evidence of operators physically based in Australia that are undertaking the type of activity you refer to.
Any other views?
Well, I would just say that the premise of the legislation, the interception legislation, is that all communications and information about a communication are private, and that certainly is under the Telecommunications Act as well, and that, providing the Act provides that balance and giving law enforcement the powers to be able to investigate anyone of, a dubious nature.
All right. Thank you. Thanks. Senator Ludlam?
Thanks, Chair. Maybe to start with something a little bit provocative, if this data is so important for law enforcement purposes, why have we ruled out the idea of including the conversations themselves and the web traffic and the material that you looked at rather than just the header information? Why not just go the whole hog while we're at it?
Mm-hmm. They are very different things. The communication, the actual content of the communication is a very different thing to the information about a telecommunication call, and they are used for very different purposes within law enforcement agencies. And it is critical investigation for a very broad range of investigations. The contents of communications are very important as well, but for very serious crime. The nature of what we're looking at is based on the needs and the situation. I mean, in essence, this has come to us because of the needs of law enforcement and the views of industry, and that's why we're looking at that particular.
Surely, law enforcement officers, now take this assistant commissioner if you like. You could use all the data you could get. Why not catch all this material rather than stripping all the personal stuff out?
Well, I think, Senator, it gets down to one of the issues that Senator Cameron raised earlier about the balance of privacy versus the balance of law enforcement wanting access to the information. I think the balance is right as it stands at the moment. We get access to the metadata. That's what we've asked to be retained, and rightly so. If a law enforcement officer requires access to the actual content of the telecommunications or the emails, etc., we go to a judicial officer with an affidavit and we obtain that information for a judicial process. And I think that's the way it should be. There needs to be the balance, and I think that balance is accurate.
I'm interested to know, maybe back to you, Ms. Smith, if you didn't consult privacy experts or civil libertarians in that process of not consultation, I forget what was the other word that you used before, you've asked the industry what's possible, you've asked law enforcement what do you need, but at no point do you seem to have asked anybody, is this a wise idea? How did you strike that balance?
Well, I certainly consulted privacy in the fact that we did consult privacy experts in the Office of the Privacy Commissioner and also Ms. Sheedy's branch in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet.
The Privacy Commissioner was pretty uncomplimentary when we asked him about it this morning. I'm presuming you're aware of that.
I have viewed his evidence and... I thought he was
uncommittal rather than uncomplimentary.
Let's call him a data retention skeptic, but apologise for interrupting.
I was just going to say that, and I suppose I'd like to reiterate that we were consulting at that stage to come forward with a proposal, which we have not yet developed. We are still looking at all of the options, and to take something out to a broader range of people who before we have a view we thought was not appropriate. So because we take consultation at this point very seriously about getting our facts right and getting a very good understanding, but as I say, we consulted at length with both the Office of Privacy Commissioner, despite any comments as I said, I've read the evidence as well from this morning, and thought that he was just non-committal rather than anything else. Right. I don't know if Sheedy has anything else.
I won't speak to verbal the commissioner either. He's not here to present his point of view now. In his submission, the Internet Safety Institute, and they haven't appeared before us today, but the submission's on the committee's website, pointed out something that I think perhaps contradicts some of the positions that you've put this afternoon, that the threshold test for law enforcement agencies to gain access to online data versus offline data are actually currently quite inconsistent and currently quite out of balance. And I just wonder whether you could clear that up for us. It's substantially easier, in my understanding, to get a copy of an electronic document than it would be for somebody to find out what's in this notebook. We've mentioned the Telecommunications Interception Act a couple of times this afternoon. We get amendments to that through the Parliament about every 20 minutes, and I've never seen one yet that increased privacy protections for people. It always seems to be rolling out the other way. So, Assistant Commissioner, is it your understanding, is it accurate to say that law enforcement officers would find it quite a bit easier to obtain access to telecommunications records than what they would to a physical piece of evidence?
Yes.
Yes. So I'm not sure why we keep hearing that it's stringent and that it's very difficult, when in fact the burden of, I'm not quite sure how you put it, the kind of requests that you would need to put forward, the bar is substantially lower for telecommunications.
Well, I think you might find, Senator, that access to a hard copy piece of paper also includes the content of that information as well. whereas the access to telecommunications data under the Telecommunications Telecommunications Interception Act is only the metadata, so that's the information about the communication.
You can go quite so you're a bit further if I'm suspected of serious crime. You can pretty much have the entire contents of my Gmail, can't you?
It would have to be a warrant.
And it's a very high threshold, extremely high threshold, for getting contents of the communication.
We've just had another witness join us, so I might...
Mr. Besgrave, welcome. Thank you for coming out of the site. Would you state your full name and capacity in which you're appearing?
Keith William Besgrave. I'm the First Assistant Secretary of the Digital Economy Services Division in the Department of Broadband, and I humbly apologise on behalf of Qantas.
Thank you. Senator Ludlam.
We'll call them up as the next witness.
Took an earlier flight, Mr. Bedros.
I endeavoured to, unsuccessfully.
That's right. You have made it for the last 12 minutes, so what's been an interesting day. Can I put to you, Assistant Commissioner, and I don't know whether this level of detail you'll need to take on notice, but coming back to Operation Centurion that you mentioned for us before, as case study A of how this data can be extremely valuable for law enforcement agencies, specifically what data you did use to put that case and those prosecutions together, whether it was web proxy logs, emails between offenders, and whether it was, again, was just the metadata or the emails themselves, whether you were mapping IPs to specific customers, those sort of, second-order questions about what exactly it is that you need to put those kind of prosecutions together.
We'll have to take that on notice, and I don't have that detailed information.
Yeah, that's okay. I think that's appropriate. Can we just perhaps get a where to from here for somebody? Is the process from here that you've been tasked, Ms. Smith, to put a proposal together or a set of options together to go to the attorney, and then there's a policy decision made at that level?
Basically, we're still considering the merits, of any proposal, and there's been really no decision made on where and how, and if we will take this forward in what process. So, I don't have any particular instructions on where we're taking this. We're still gathering information.
All right, that wasn't quite what the question was, but let's take it back a step further. Did you receive an instruction from the attorney's office to investigate such a proposal, or did the idea come from within the department, or indeed the AFP?
Look, I think this issue has been around for a long time. There's also been international developments in this area, and it's been in response to both advice from law enforcement and the industry in relation to changes to the retention of telecommunications data and the importance of the access to it.
That wasn't quite an answer either, was it? It sounds like we're heading more towards that it was a bottom-up initiative rather than a top-down one. Is that a reasonable paraphrasing?
Can I actually say that it's been around for a very long time, and I can't actually recall where it actually began. We can take that on notice, where it has. But
presumably the Attorney General didn't wake up one day to find out that your office was investigating data retention. What's the cause and effect here?
Well, I think Ms. Kelly's answer was exactly that we were told very early on by industry that they may not be retaining this sort of information into the future, and that and they told law enforcement that, and as a result we immediately sort of had a look at what was happening in industry and looked at what was happening internationally on this scope as well. But as I said to you, I don't have the timings and where it actually started or anything with me, but I'm happy to take that sort of question on notice.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. And perhaps this is a follow-up of what the Assistant Commissioner put to us before. With the industry came to you and said we may not be retaining this data into the future. That's interesting. What were they formally retaining that they're proposing to no longer retain?
It's information, because when... the good old days where we all had a fixed line phone, there was information kept about. I called someone, their phone number, how much, how long, how much it cost, all that sort of information. And then I got a mobile phone and bought, you know, a contract which lets me, you know, have a few hundred dollars worth of calls a month. So in those cases, they don't retain exactly this sort of information before. And now I'll be able to move to a new VoIP communication where they certainly won't have any of that sort of information retained for their billing purposes, which was essentially the kind of database that they gain this information from. They still create the information, but for other purposes, you know, for trafficking information. So industry are very good in coming to us and giving forewarning on when technology is going to change that may have an effect on law enforcement's views. So they're always wanting to make sure that, you know, we can keep pace with technology. They are very helpful in that respect. So that's the kind of information. And because they have, you know, given that they know they service from these particular databases, a lot of requests, if those databases are not going to exist, they're moving into new technologies. They want to know if law enforcement will want access to the new technologies.
Okay, that's helpful. So it's more that the phasing out of older technologies where we had certain kinds of record keeping will no longer exist. It's not that ISPs are moving to a system where they would no longer be retaining web server logs and that kind of stuff that they've always been doing. Okay, I think that's a useful clarification. Just finally, because I think we're approaching the end of the day, the issue of the piece, the Freedom of Information request that came back drenched in black ink, and the comment that flowed from that, that the redaction had occurred to prevent premature and unnecessary debate, which, if anything, I think phrases like that tend to just inflame the situation, quite frankly. When do you think it'll be time for the necessary and appropriate debate?
Well, again, I think that's a matter for the government to decide when there will be any public consultation on that. We're not really in a position to comment on that today.
Just to check, the government didn't initiate this. It sounds as though the department did. So that's an interesting shifting of responsibility. This wasn't a directive that came from a political level to investigate a set of technologies. It's coming from the other way.
We can't publicly consult.
We can't publicly consult without the approval of the government.
You can quietly gather intelligence, I guess.
Well, to date, we haven't been able to quietly gather intelligence on this issue.
Well, because we had to put a Senate inquiry referral through the Senate chamber, and media organisations had to put Freedom of Information requests about an issue that concerns every single Australian. That's why. And in good faith, rumours flourish in a vacuum, and you've created a vacuum. And that's why people are going, well, what is this about? It sounds important. If the way that it was put to me earlier in the day is, if you don't trust us to tell us about it, what it is that you're doing, why should we trust you to have all this data in the first place? And maybe we'll leave you with that to ponder. I've got no other questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Senator. One further quick question I have is, we had evidence from the Privacy Commissioner about, or it's in respect of advertisers essentially vacuuming for information that they can then use for marketing purposes. And the Privacy Commissioner was talking about, if I understood the Privacy Commissioner correctly, that the use of an ISP address was not within the purview of the Privacy Act. Do any of you have any comments to make on that sort of behaviour?
Not so much on the behaviour, but just to clarify, I think what Timothy Pilgrim was saying was that the ISP address alone may not be personal information which is captured by the Privacy Act.
Yes.
So just to clarify that.
Yes.
And then that address is captured by both the Telecommunications Act and the Telecommunications Interception Access Act. And it's, depending on its use, it may fall within the jurisdiction of the Telecommunications Act, I believe.
With what sort of consequences?
Well, it depends on for what purpose that information is being used. If it's an IP address and that's the only information, then if it's not being used for a purpose that's linked to an individual, then it might not be covered by privacy legislation.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's being used for a purpose that links it directly to an individual, then it might be captured by Part 13 of the Telecommunications
Act. Yes, the consequences of which could be?
That the sanctions under that part of the Act could apply, but it depends on for what purpose it's being used.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Sorry, if I could just elaborate further on that. At the moment, most IP addresses are IPv4. As we move to what is called Internet Protocol version 6, and you move to an era where many IP addresses are actually attached to machines rather than to persons, that issue could actually become still more problematic.
Okay, anything else that any of you want to add at this stage?
Not from me. No.
Okay. Well, thank you, and thanks, colleagues. In wrapping up today's proceedings, can I have a motion from a fellow member of the committee to accept any tabled documents and also to receive on a confidential basis the documentation tendered by Ms. Smith? Thank you, Senator Ludman. Seconded, Senator Cameron. The committee has set the 26th of November for the return of answers to any questions on notice taken by witnesses here today, and that wraps up today. So thank you, Water, Orange and Bull Boys, and let's not forget Hansard, the Secretariat, and most importantly our witnesses today. Thank you very much, and we concluded.